Hello everyone, and welcome back to the History of Scotland podcast, episode 51, the Q&A special. I'm your host Fraser, and today's instalment is not just any episode, it's a special Q&A session that promises to peel back even more layers of Scotland's storied history, and also some history about myself. Before we delve into the heart of today's discussion, I'd like to extend a heartfelt reminder and update on our episode schedule in this month. As you know, last month we had some unforeseen circumstances. We missed out on what would have been our third episode of the month. However, in a bid to make amends and ensure that no stone is left unturned in our historical journey, we've slated four episodes for this March. This adjustment not only reaffirms our commitment to exploring Scotland's past, but also enriches our understanding with an additional episode. In our next meeting, we'll embark on a discussion about the Lionheart Crusade and scrutinise Scotland's pivotal role in it, setting the stage to later close out William I's reign, a narrative arc you won't want to miss. Anyway, let's turn the spotlight back to today. I'm thrilled to announce this is our special Q&A episode, a direct response to the avalanche of questions you've generously sent our way. The enthusiasm and effort you've shown in crafting these questions have been nothing short of inspiring. Reading through your submissions have been a joy, and I'm equally excited to address them. The overwhelming response has pleasantly surprised me, and it's a testament to the vibrant community we've built together around our shared passion for Scottish history. Given the success and engagement we've seen with this format, it's my pleasure to reveal that we plan to host another Q&A session around the 100th episode mark. So if your question doesn't make it into today's episode, or if there was simply not enough time to ask, fear not, there'll be another opportunity in the future to quench your historical curiosity and delve deeper into Scotland's past. In a departure from our usual format, today's episode will be an unscripted adventure. For the first time, I'll be answering your questions without the aid of a script. This approach may lead to answers that are a bit lengthier and perhaps more convoluted than you're accustomed to. However, the essence of this episode is to engage with your queries in the most authentic and comprehensive manner possible. This is a chance for us to explore the nuances of Scottish history together, and also the history about myself and podcasting, etc. So, without further ado, let's delve into the first question of this special episode. Your enthusiasm and participation have made this Q&A session possible, and I'm eager to tackle the diverse array of inquiries that have come our way. From the depths of Scotland's ancient histories to the intricate details of its cultural and political evolution, today's episode promises to be a journey of discovery, fueled by your curiosity and shared passion for history and this podcast. So, let's embark on this exploratory voyage together, unraveling the mysteries of Scotland's past, one question at a time. So, let's start with the first question. So again, we're going off script now. As you can tell, the intro was very scripted. We're now off script. So let's see how well we do here. Question one from Henry: how did you get into podcasting? Well, Henry, thank you for the question. So, how did I get into podcasting? So, I've actually done a few podcasts before. One podcast I did earlier than the History of Scotland podcast was a kind of a failed one. It was kind of a stories of iconic stories podcast. So, I was telling like the rise of Julius Caesar, Napoleon. I did them in 10 episode bite-sized chunks, but I noticed that, you know, I got through them and I wasn't delving into enough detail. I wasn't very comprehensive in my answers, and to be honest, there was better sources, better material out there to tell the rise of Julius Caesar, the rise of Napoleon, etc. So that was my previous podcast in history. In terms of my multimedia history, well, I've been doing YouTube ever since I was probably the age of 13. You know, everyone's done a gaming video back then, so I used to do gaming videos on my YouTube channel, and I had quite a successful YouTube channel up to about 7,000 subscribers, where I learned how to do basic editing, speaking into a microphone, etc. So I've done podcasting in relation to that YouTube channel as well. It was just me and my group of friends just chatting, talking about random things, random events around the world. A lot more freeform than it is with the History of Scotland. So really, I've got quite a good background in history when it comes to podcasting. It wasn't just this was my first podcast and nothing else happened. No, I've had YouTube channels and a previous few podcasts as I worked my way through my multimedia career, let's say. And obviously I started the History of Scotland back in 2020, during COVID. It was a time when I was actually reading a couple of History of Scotland books, and I thought, you know what, no one's ever done a storied past of Scotland. Just no one ever delved deep enough, in my opinion, to the history of Scotland. So that's where I kind of came up with the idea, and that's where we are today. So yeah, thank you for the question, Henry. Hope that answers your question. Question two from John. What is your interest in Scottish history? Well, that's a bit of a broad question, John, but thank you regardless. My interest in Scottish history. Well, first off, let's start off with the obvious. I won't say my last name for obvious reasons, but my first and last name is Scottish. My father's side of the family is Scottish. All my relatives live in Scotland, so I do have massive Scottish heritage. They all live around Glasgow area. Second, in terms of Scottish history, I've always been interested in more Britannic history, so the history of Britannia, so the history of England, Ireland, Wales, and Scotland. And well, I feel like the history of England is something I was taught in school a lot since I'm English. So I was taught all about, you know, William the Conqueror, Richard the Lionheart, John Lackland, you know, the Hundred Years' War, etc., Henry VIII. I feel like I know all that stuff like it's the back of my hand. Scottish history, you know, I only knew little bits. And, you know, I knew about James I from an England perspective. I knew about Mary, Queen of Scots. Obviously, everyone knows about William Wallace and Robert Bruce, but no much else. So my interest in Scottish history actually came from a learning curve from myself to learn more about Scotland. So when I started delving more into Scottish history myself, I started to think, well, this is actually really interesting. This would be really cool to share with other people. And you know, I feel like in the British Isles, in terms of ranking order, you know, everyone knows about English history. Everyone knows that Wales' history is around kind of English history at the same time. You've got the Welsh Longbowmen in the Hundred Years' War, and obviously you've got the story of Llywelyn the Great and the Welsh stories there. But again, they're not quite detailed. Irish history is quite well told due to obviously the many the many ways the English have treated the Irish over the years. And Scottish history, I feel, has always been told through the most popular stories. So the popular stories being William Wallace and the quest for independence with Robert the Bruce, Mary Queen of Scots, the Union of the Crowns, things like that. They're always well-told stories that are merged together. And the things I don't hear a lot about are, you know, the stories that we've gone through, the Davidonian Revolution. The reason why I go on about the Davidonian Revolution so much is that's such a crucial part in Scottish history, where everything changes, everything becomes more Normanised, more French, more in line with the European kingship model, and it kind of modernises itself. And I was never taught that, never knew about that. And yeah, I just, that's where my interest is, to find out things like that. Now, there's certain things that I've been told, you know, I went to Fort George. I've been to Fort George quite a few times in Scotland, which is in Inverness, and you know, I've learned a lot there, such as, you know, the Jacobite rebellions and the rebellions of the clans. So I'm looking forward to telling those stories. But again, I think they're a bit more well told. Obviously, you've got the English Civil War and Scotland's participation in it. Obviously, Scotland sided with Charles II quite a lot of the time, and Charles I, and tried to fight against Cromwell and the English parliamentary forces. So that'll be interesting. So yeah, I guess in short of this long convoluted answer, hence why I do scripts in my actual episodes, my interest comes from the urge to learn more of history that I don't know. I'm an Englishman. I know a lot of English history, don't know a lot of Scottish history. I've got Scottish ancestry, so the two and two go well together. Hope that answers your question. Thank you very much. Question three from Cassie. What other historical subjects, era, topics do you find interesting? Okay, well, let's rattle some off. So I think the first and most obvious one would be kind of my military history background. I would say I'm a lot more versed in military history than I am in general history. So yeah, I like learning about the First World War, the Second World War. I like learning about the First World War more because I find it's, again, one of the ones that gets kind of forgotten about when you think about the first two World Wars. Everyone wants to talk about Hitler and the Nazis and the Second World War and not the first one. So, yeah, I like to learn about that. I like to learn about Napoleon. In fact, fun fact, Napoleon shares the same birthday as me, and he is my favourite historical character. Like, my favourite historical person is Napoleon and Julius Caesar, and I am I'm in love with the Napoleonic era. So Napoleonic era, the two world wars, obviously I love the medieval era as well, the Crusades. I like learning about the Hundred Years War. What else? American Civil War as well. I've recently got into learning more about that. That's been cool. I've also been interested in learning more about the Soviet collapse in more modern history context, because obviously with all the stuff that's going on in Ukraine and Russia at the moment, it's actually quite interesting to understand the background of, you know, the Soviet bloc, you know, Eastern and Western Germany. So I've actually been quite interested in learning about the fall of the Soviet Union. In fact, there's a really good TV show that I'd recommend anyone to watch, and it's called Chernobyl. It is on Now TV/Sky if you're in the UK, and I believe it's on HBO. It was made by HBO in America, and it's probably the best series I've watched ever. You know, better than Game of Thrones style. It shows so much about Soviet history, even though it's based around Chernobyl. It's great. What else for historical subjects? Obviously, I'm interested in Scottish history. English history, I am unfortunately well versed in. It was the first thing I got into, so it is something I do quite enjoy learning about. In terms of periods of English history that I like the most, I would probably say I like probably from the Norman Conquest up until about Henry VIII. After that, I kind of slowly lose interest. I'm a bit more of a medieval guy. And then I definitely would say I like the Anglo-Saxon history as well. I love Anglo-Saxon history. I've already mentioned the Anglo-Saxon podcast, history podcast, that gave me a shout out and I gave him a shout out. I really enjoyed listening to that. I enjoyed learning about Anglo-Saxon history as well as Viking history. A couple of good shows on that. Vikings, which is less historical accurate, and The Last Kingdom, both of them are really good. Those are probably the top first few topics off the top of my head. I think there's definitely so much more out there that I would like to learn, and I probably would find interest in if my brain and time was big enough. But yeah, hopefully that answers your question. Question 4 from James. Could you talk more about Scottish clans? What's their general history and when do they start? So, absolutely, James. I'd be delighted to delve into this for you. The origins of Scottish clans can be traced back to the 12th century, though their roots likely delve even deeper into Scotland's early medieval history around the Gaelic times, but we'll come to the Gaelic stuff in a minute. The word clan itself comes from the Gaelic clan, meaning children or descendants, and it accurately reflects the structure and concept of clans as extended kinship groups. Each clan was essentially a large family unit, with its members claiming descent from a common ancestor. This lineage was not only strictly patrilineal, but also came from adoption and fostering, blurring the lines of these biological ancestries, but strengthening the strategic alliances and the clan's overall cohesion. You could probably tell I'm now reading from a script, but I had to do some background on this myself as well to make sure I'm telling everything factually as always. Anyway, the golden age of the clans flourished from the 13th to the 18th centuries, so we got a bit of time before we get to there in our own story. But during that time, they played a pivotal role in the social, political and military spheres of Scotland, especially in the Highlands. Again, we'll get to those eventually. Clans were governed by a chieftain or a lord, who led not only in warfare, but also served as a judge and protector of his people. The bond between a clan and its chief was a deeply personal and reciprocal thing. The chief provided leadership and protection, while the clan offered loyalty and military service. Clan territories were marked by natural boundaries, and the land was held in common by the members of the clan. This connection to the land, coupled with a strong sense of kinship, fostered a deep-seated loyalty that often led to intense and bloody feuds with neighbouring clans, as well as the unified resistance against external threats. The decline of the clan system began in the 18th century, particularly after the Jacobite risings of the 1750s and the 1745s. Again, something we'll definitely be touching upon in the very future of the history of Scotland. I can't wait to learn more about the Jacobite risings. The final nail in the coffin was the Act of the Act of Prussification in 1746, which aimed to assimilate the Highland culture into the broader British identity. Traditional Highland dress, the Gaelic language, and the very fabric of clan society were targeted and suppressed. Despite these efforts to dilute their cultural significance, clans have remained an integral part of Scotland's identity. Today, they are celebrated for their rich heritage, with the clan gatherings, games, and societies thriving not only in Scotland but around the world, uniting people with Scottish ancestry under the banner of their ancestral clans. But this also has a connection to our time too. The connection between the ancient Scottish clans and Gaelic nobles and families of our current time around 1180 is deeply intertwined with the social, political and cultural fabric of medieval Scotland. This period marks a significant phase in the consolidation and expansion of the clan system, but also the wars against the Normanisation of Scotland. Around 1180, Scotland was undergoing significant transformation as we know. The country was gradually moving from a patchwork of smaller, often competing kingdoms and territories into a more unified realm. Despite this centralising power, the clan system remained a vital part of Scottish society, especially in the Highlands and the Isles, where Gaelic traditions and language were strongest. The Gaelic nobles and families of this era were not just leaders or landholders, they were living embodiments of their clan's history, culture and identity, some dating back to the ancient Celtic kings and heroes. This ancestry was not merely a matter of pride, it was a source of their authority and legitimacy. The stories, deeds and legendary exploits of their ancestors fighting the Romans in songs, poems and tales reinforce their status and connection to the people. The system of tanistry, which was practiced by many Gaelic clans, ensured that leadership passed not from father to son in a straightforward hereditary line, but to the most capable male within the royal family, similar to the old Kingdom of Alba system that we were accustomed to in earlier episodes. This method aimed to ensure strong leadership, crucial for the survival and prosperity of the clan in challenging political and physical landscapes of medieval Scotland. Moreover, the Gaelic nobles and families were integral to the administration of the kingdom. They served as kings, representatives, lawgivers and judges in their territories. Both Gaelic custom and emerging feudal laws introduced from Normandy and England. Their castles and fortifications were centres of power, culture and learning, reflecting the fusion of Gaelic traditions with European influences that characterised the period. This era also saw Gaelic nobles engaging in and shaping political dynamics of Scotland through the alliances, marriages and sometimes conflicts with their neighbours. Think of our last episode with our Gilbert. The influence of Gaelic nobles and families around 1180 is a testament to the resilience and adaptability of the clan system. It only survived the centralising efforts of the Davidonian Revolution, but it continued to flourish, fostering a unique Scottish identity that will later come into effect in the 13th century onwards. The period set the stage for the enduring legacy up to Scotland in the present day. Hopefully that answers your question. Sorry for a long answer there, but I thought I'd give you a proper detailed answer with proper references in it. If you got any more questions around Gaelic history and clan history, I definitely recommend reading a couple of books. I'll try and get them put in the bottom of this episode. If not, I'll get them in next week's episode. Question 5 from Elzig. Over the centuries and weeks, there's a mention of the Scottish-English border as if it was a fixed thing with lots of raiding from both ends. Is this true or was it a moving entity? First off, great question. The Scottish-English border has indeed been a focal point of our exchange over the past centuries. Your query touches on a complex aspect of British history marked by fluctuating boundaries and frequent raiding. To delve into this topic properly, it's thrilling to announce that we will be dedicating a special two-parter to this very subject soon, offering a comprehensive explanation of the historical dynamics at play. So, the notion of the border as a fixed entity is somewhat misleading when we consider the border span of history. While today we recognise the border as a well-defined line, in history it tells a story of a continuous movement, negotiation and conflict. Think of how much land David I had in England under his leadership compared to Malcolm IV and William the Lion, for example. That border was continuously moving. During the medieval period, especially from the 12th to 16th century, the border was far from being a static line on the map. It was more of a frontier zone, a broad swath of territory that witnessed constant shifts in control between Scottish and English forces, influenced by battles, treaties, and marriages. This region was characterised by its lawlessness, with the practice of reaving, which was raiding, being commonplace among the border families. These families, both Scottish and English, lived in a near constant state of feudaling and raiding, driven by the need to protect their livestock, lands, and livelihoods from their neighbours. The border families, or the border reavers as they were known, played a significant role in this, in the history of Scotland and the history of England, from the 13th to 17th century. These families often lived in a state of near constant warfare due to the lawlessness in the area. So, let's rattle off some of the famous border families for you. We had the Armstrongs, the Kerrs, or Carrs as pronounced, the Scots, the Grahams, the Douglas family, and the Elliots. Now, these were the Scottish side. Let's touch upon some of the English families. We had the Percy family, the Darcy family, the Neville family, and the Howard family. The border's fluidity was partly a result of the political strategies employed by both the Scottish and English monarchies, who sought to extend their influence over these contested territories. Major events such as the War of Scottish Independence, which we'll get to it very soon in the 13th and 14th centuries, saw significant shifts in the border's delineation. The Battle of Bannockburn in 1314 and the subsequent Treaty of Edinburgh on Northampton in 1328 are examples of how military conflict and diplomatic negotiations could dramatically alter the landscape of power and territory along the border. It wasn't until the Union of the Crowns in around 1603, when James VI of Scotland also became James I of England, that the incessant conflicts along the border began to diminish. However, the cultural and social impacts of centuries of border conflict have a lasting legacy, shaping the identities and histories of those living on both sides of the modern boundary. In our upcoming special two-parter on the subject, we'll dive deeper into the historical shifts of the Scottish-English border, exploring the reasons behind its fluidity, the impact of raiding on the lives of those in the border regions, and how the tumultuous history has influenced the relationship between Scotland and England up to the present day. It's a fascinating chapter of our history, rich with tales of bravery, betrayal, and the unyielding spirit of people who called the borderlands their home. So stay tuned for that two-parter episode. We'll also go over the families in a bit more detail and mention who they are, who came into power at what time. Hopefully that answers your question. Thank you very much for it. Question 6 from Jack. Monarch ranking is always fun. Yes it is. What would your ranking be of the Scottish rulers you covered so far? And at what point do you think there's enough info to start ranking their reigns? Well, let's start with the ranking. The ranking is quite tumultuous and complex, given, well, sources and, you know, how I would rate a king. I rate kings kind of who are stable, who have strong leadership, who can rule effectively in Scotland and actually keep the kingdom together, do some great changes. So with that, my first great king, my number one in the list, would be David I. Obviously, David I and everything he accomplished in his reign, from the Davidonian Revolution to all the other reforms, to the amount of land he held, to the land he held in England, it was massive. And obviously the amount of years he reigned for as well. And not only that, but when David I died, obviously he was able to pass on his land to his grandson very successfully, which marked kind of one of the only periods that we've told in Scottish history that didn't involve really many civil wars. Obviously there was some contested, but there wasn't a massive war that broke out. So that just goes to say why I love David I. And if you want more info on why I love David I, just go re-listen to the early episodes on David I, especially the last one. I do go into some detail on that. Second, I would say Malcolm Canmore. And Malcolm Canmore, I feel like he started the modernization that David I would later carry on. Malcolm Canmore and Queen Margaret, St. Margaret of Scotland, they held the Scotland together in a very strong way. Obviously, Malcolm Canmore, Malcolm III, took over after Macbeth, and yeah, he guided Scotland very strongly and left a lasting legacy of his heirs, all of his heirs, who would all come to the throne one by one until they got to David I, and I think that's just a testament to his legacy. Third would be Constantine II. I thought he was a great Alban king. He helped lead a bit more of a modern Alba, if you will, and he helped fight the Anglo-Saxons in a very successful way. So Constantine II definitely is my third choice. After that, I'd probably say fourth would be Alexander III. Obviously, his reign was marked by peace and economic prosperity. Obviously, the Treaty in Perth in 1266, which secured control over the Western Isles, is a highlight of his leadership, but his rule is something we're going to come to very shortly. Alexander I, he was known for his strong and sometimes harsh leadership. Obviously, Alexander I was the previous ruler after Edgar. Edgar's reign, who was Edgar, from 1097 to 1107, I would rate him fifth. After that, I definitely want to put a special mention to St. Margaret, Queen Consort. Although she wasn't a monarch, I think her influence on Malcolm III's reign was profound. She steered Scotland towards a greater alignment with European Christendom and reformed the Scottish Church massively, which had long-term implications for the Scottish society and governance that we've constantly gone through in our past episodes. William the Lion's brother, Malcolm IV, I thought Malcolm's reign was challenged by his youth and inexperience, but he managed to overcome these and, you know, maintain peace and his commitments to the church. Then I would probably say around 7th, 8th, I would put William I, William the Lion. Obviously, we're touching upon him at the moment. He was a great warrior king, but I do think his capture at the Treaty of and the Treaty of Fowlies kind of hindered him on this list, which is why he's further down. Duncan I, even though he's one of the first Dunkeeld rulers, I do feel he was a bit of a tyrant, which kind of unyielded the empire and caused Macbeth to rise. Not empire, kingdom, sorry. Macbeth would be ninth. He's often unfairly, you know, shown by Shakespeare in a bad light, and I'm sure in our episode that where, what was it called again? I think it was, let's just have a quick look. Episode 20, The Fall of Macbeth and the Rise of Malcolm III, and The True Story of Macbeth, which was episode 18. Basically, episode 18, 19, and 20, I really enjoyed telling because I feel Shakespeare did such a number of Macbeth that people kind of don't think of him the same way. So I do think he has a bit of a bad rep. He was kind of a strong king, but he was a, you know, he was an overthrower at the end of the day, so he was going to get overthrown himself. And then my last king on this list would be Duncan II. Duncan II wasn't meant to be this great king. You know, he was this Norman king who'd served in the courts of the Normans before coming a king. And he was overthrown by his uncle very shortly. So, yeah, he kind of let me down there. And I made that very clear when he came to the throne in 1094. I think in terms of when we can start ranking these kings, it's I don't know, it's by the reign of Malcolm Canmore. I think we can start to see a rich tapestry of sources that include not just Scottish chroniclers but the annals, so I think that gives us more information to go on. I think after the reign of Malcolm III we just get more and more sources as we go on, so I'd say anything onwards from the 13th century gives us a good deal of information to, well, rank our kings. But I've managed to rattle off quite a few there that were even from the Kingdom of Alba's time. It's really hard to go through the list of the Kingdom of Alba because, you know, when I look through the list on my spreadsheet that I have, you know, we've got probably about 12-13 kings, okay, and I covered those 12-13 kings over a case of I think about 6-7 episodes, which is quite mental. We were doing about one or two kings per episode, and I mentioned it at the time, there just wasn't enough historical source to go on to do an episode, you know, a bunch of episodes per king. But as soon as we've got to the, you know, past the 11th century, I've been able to dedicate 6-7 episodes just on one king. So I'd say anything past the 10th, 11th century is a good period to rank kings, but it's down to personal preference. I've referenced kings there before the 10th century, so it's down to whatever you think. Right, this episode is going on quite a long time, so I'm going to try and battle through the last remaining questions. There are quite a few left over, so as I said, I will put those leftover questions in either next week's episode if I have time, or I'll put them in the 100th episode Q&A. We'll see. Anyway, question 7 from Valerian. What topics in Scottish history take your pick for being the most interesting? I've already alluded to it. The Davidonian Revolution. I'd probably also say the Scottish Wars of Independence and the Jacobite Rebellions. And then probably a fourth would be the English Civil War and Scotland's participation in it. Question 8 from Adam. Are there any inspirations you have and take from other forms of media? Can be podcasters, YouTubers. Yes, so I listen to quite a few podcasters. Obviously, everyone's listened to the History of Rome / Revolutions from Mike Duncan. Really enjoy his work. He was the first podcaster I listened to. Yeah, just amazing in terms of the work he's done. He's a leading podcaster in our field and always has been. The second best, in my opinion, has always been the History of England podcast. I've listened to all of it. It's great. So much history is told. And yeah, David is a really great person to listen to. Anglo-Saxon History podcast is another great shout out there. So those are YouTubers. I listen to Kings and Generals, History TV. And I also listen to Animated History as well, or some good ones. And also, I would also recommend Oversimplified as well, if you want some simplified history in a bit more of a fun context. From Rosie, what are your other interests outside of history? Well, I like to game, that's very evident. I like playing Crusader Kings, Hearts of Iron 4, lots of RPGs, Baldur's Gate, Skyrim. I like FPSs as well, Counter-Strike and Valorant, for example, Call of Duty. You know, I'm just a big gamer. I've got a massive PC set up here, really expensive PC setup. I game all the time. So yeah, I do a lot of gaming. I am also interested in Formula One. I do a lot of go-karting in my free time. And I like to sail as well. So question 10 from James A. What do you do for a living and would you ever do podcasting full time? So I am a developer. I do a lot of development on the web. So I do a lot of cloud development. I'm a cloud developer, so a lot of codey stuff. Think of Mr. Robot, except I'm definitely not Rami Malek. And would I ever consider doing podcasting full time? Yes, I would, but there is a reason why I've never put ads on this podcast. I never will put ads on this podcast. History to me should always be free. So if I were ever to do podcasting full time, I'd need to sustain a salary off donations and Patreon. And I don't think I'm there yet. And to be honest, I enjoy my career as well at the moment. So I enjoy doing this as a hobby, but maybe in the future. Question 11 from Eddie. Is there a certain part of Scottish history you don't like or at least interested in? I definitely would say I struggle to get through the Kingdom of Alba and the Kingdom of Picts. Anything that is called the Dark Ages, I struggle to learn from. I know it was called the Dark Ages and we did eventually get through it, but I really wasn't interested in that time. And then, you know what, I'm probably not looking forward to the Stuarts. That is actually coming at us very fast after, obviously, the De Bruce families. I didn't enjoy some of the Stuart reigns, so that's probably my least interested parts of it. And then we've got a couple of questions that are really more thank yous that I just wanted to mention. From James R. Excellent podcast as always. The depth you go into is outstanding. Loving the podcast. Thank you. You're very welcome, James. I always try to go into a good amount of depth. I try to make sure I don't mumble my words. I'm getting better pronunciations and giving you guys historical sources. So I'm glad you're enjoying that. And the final question from Boris. Just no question. Thanks for doing this podcast series. I seriously enjoy listening to it every week on the way to work. I just thought I'd put a couple of nice little thank yous at the end. I will make sure to include the four leftover questions that we have in either next week's episode or the 100th podcast special. Anyway, last thing before we end this episode, I've also want to mention I've been helping a certain Volkban, he's known as Volkban, create something called the Echoes of Emperors board game. Basically, think of Age of Empires 2 or 3 if you've ever played that on a board game, where you choose a civilization and you fight against it on a board game. There is a Scottish civilization, believe it or not, and he's wanted to do it very historically, so I've been helping give him some info from a Scottish civilization perspective. Anyway, be sure to check him out. There's links to his Kickstarter and Twitter in the description. Yeah, really really great work he's doing. I know it's quite a short shout out. I can't really go into depth about the board game. Have a look yourself. The detail is amazing, and I'm definitely continuing to help him out. And hopefully when the board game becomes live, if it comes live, I can start referencing it more in the future. Anyway, as we draw the curtains on this special Q&A episode, I want to take a moment to express my deepest gratitude again. Thank you, seriously, everyone, for your curiosity, for your questions, and for the time you've taken to engage with us. Sorry for rushing towards the end, but this episode is going on. Going through your inquiries has provided answers that have been really cool, and it's been a really rewarding experience for me. Your enthusiasm for learning more about myself and the Scottish history is amazing, and it's been a pleasure to delve into these questions with you. As I mentioned, we're going to plan another Q&A episode around the 100th episode mark, so if you haven't had your question answered or you do want to ask a question, still ask it below. Reminder, Spotify listeners, you can ask it using the Q&A function underneath this episode. Podbean enthusiasts, you can leave a comment under the episode on the app, and then Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or any other people, you can email your questions to historyofscotlandpodcast@gmail.com, or you can join the conversation on our Facebook group or our Twitter. As a reminder, this March is a little different. To make up for the episode we missed last month, we'll be releasing a total of 4 episodes. Next time, we'll embark on an exploration of the Lionheart Crusade and uncover Scotland's role in this significant historical event. Before we finally move to close out one of Scotland's longest reigning monarchs, William I, his reign has been very up and down, hasn't it? It's been very tumultuous, but he has come out on top in the end, hasn't he? So let's close out his reigning style. That'll be the last episode in March. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter as always, at the History of SC1. That is at the History of SC1, or like our Facebook page at the History of Scotland podcast to stay updated on all things related to Scotland's past. We're around 100 members now in that group, so it's amazing to see. Your support through follows, likes, and especially reviews on your preferred podcasting platform help us reach more people who share our passion for history, so please leave a review if you haven't already. As always, you can listen to our podcast on a variety of platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, there we go, Google Podcasts, Podbean, and many other podcasting sites. Thank you once again for joining us in this historical journey. Your participation and interest makes this podcast what it is. Thank you again for the questions. Have a fantastic week ahead, guys, and until next time, stay safe, and I'll see you all on the next one. Peace.